All right, we're back with the pod. Thanks for hanging out. Well, there's a lot of noise in the background. Coming up this summer, July 15th and 16th, it'll be another Reds Hall of Fame induction weekend. And one guy that's being inducted is my guest today. The baby-faced assassin, Danny Graves. How we doing and what are you doing? It's noisy.
Dude, what an unbelievable introduction right there. I I'm almost speechless. Is it really noisy? I was digging the music that you had going on there.
Oh, you
it's
like
a little
music?
Noisy, maybe.
That's my theme song.
I really do.
That's Cam Miller special there, my theme song. One of them.
Dude, that's so legit.
All right. It's got words to it as well.
Makes you feel real 80s. You know how I am with the 80s music.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of my wheelhouses.
If it's noisy. Yeah, if it's noisy, I'll just tell you. I'm in Bristol, Connecticut. I just arrived here from Boston. I drove this morning, and I have my suitcases. I threw them on the bed, and I got changed, and I got dressed and ready for this podcast. So I'm unpacking, but I wanted to be dressed and ready for you, Jim Day.
Well, let's explain dressed and ready, because I sent him a text, because we're doing this via phone. By the way, it's Saturday, May 20th, so a couple days before this drops. So I said, how are we looking? Like, you ready to go, ready to record this thing? So he sends me three pictures, and they're of you in your City Connect jersey and hat. Legit.
That's right. So legit.
Like, when you say you're getting ready and dressed for this podcast, you're serious. You got the Reds gear on for this podcast, which I love.
100% serious. And you're lucky I don't have baseball pants with me on this trip, because I'd have those on too. Dude, I'm so jacked up. I'm so jacked up for this time with you again, man. Like, this is great.
Well, I appreciate that. What do you think? I got to ask you about the City Connect. What do you think?
Man, I tell you what, when I first saw them, I'm not big on the colored pants.
Yeah.
Like, I like the traditional gray and white. And I thought these black pants would look a little like pajamas. But let me tell you, man, they are so sweet. I would rock those everywhere. I would probably rock those with a tie. I mean, those are so awesome.
I'm not kidding.
I love them. Yeah, I love these uniforms. And of course, the players these days, they're in such better shape than the days that I was playing. So they fit them better. And they look better on these guys than they would on some of us back in the day.
Yeah.
They're really cool. I love them.
Well, you mentioned pajamas. None look like more pajamas than Adam Dunn when he had the baggy pants, and they would go clear down to, I don't know, it just looked like pajamas on him.
Yeah, I mean, when you're 6'12" and humongous, things don't really tend to look good on you.
Yeah, I get it. By the way, who named you the baby-faced assassin? Which is one of the greatest nicknames in sports history, by the way. What a great nickname.
I know. And let me tell you, there's not many people that announce me the way you do with that nickname. And, like, you actually get into it when you say it. So I love it.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that.
It's a great nickname.
So Deion Sanders gave it to me.
What? Hold on.
We were just, yeah.
Primetime?
Primetime. The primetime, yeah. Yes. It was crazy.
Yes.
Just he was.
Yes.
I know. I can't believe I never told you this.
No. I can't believe I don't know this.
Well, you've never asked, actually.
Well, okay. Well, I'm asking now. Give me the story.
Yeah. So we were in the clubhouse, old riverfront. It had to have been 2001, right? Or 2002. What years? I don't even remember what years that we were together. Anyways,
oh,
so we're walking around the clubhouse, and I've just been on a pretty good run with some saves, and he just nonchalantly, just prime time the way he is, just walked by and say, "Oh, the baby-faced assassin." And yeah, so you know who was around? Pete Harnish was around.
Oh,
and then once he heard that, oh boy, that was the end of it. So if Pete wasn't around, this never would have stuck.
Wow.
Because to Pete's credit, he like just blew it up. And then he just called me that all the time.
Wow.
And then it became something, yeah.
Wow, that's great. Deion Sanders gave you the nickname Babyface Assassin. That's beautiful.
I know. I'll always have a link to Primetime.
Yeah. No, that's large. I mean, he's now like, you know, back in the news as being a head coach, Colorado. So, you know, Primetime. Mm-hmm. That's
great. That's right.
It's great.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that
he's a great dude.
Yeah. What was it? He was a good teammate, right?
He was a great teammate.
I hear great things about him as a teammate.
He didn't bother anybody. He went about his business and, you know, didn't get in anybody's way. And
he was pretty quiet. What was weird about him in the clubhouse, you think, okay, he's in there yapping, right? He was pretty quiet, wasn't he? Or was that just the media times when we were in there?
No. He was quiet the years that I was with him. And for whatever reason, you know, he was a great baseball player, but obviously his thing was football and entertaining. So maybe just being out of his element a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And just trying to fit in because he took a few years off from baseball. So just trying to fit back in. But I'm telling you, he was great. Like he was so supportive and just a great guy to be around. And I wish he was a little bit more loud because, you know, we could have picked his brain a little bit more than we did.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he was a great dude.
Wow. Well, you had mentioned that you're excited to come back on this podcast, and I appreciate that. The first one we did, now we're not going to get all serious here today. I would love this one to be a little more lighthearted. But the first one we did was really heavy because I had no idea going into it what we were going to talk about, at least the subject matter that came out about, you know, fighting depression and mentality and substance abuse and the stuff that you went through. And you simply, you know, I ask you, why haven't you talked about this? This could help people. And you're like, well, no one asked. So I happened to ask that day. And then it kind of, you know, I know you got some feedback from it. And then there were some other podcasts or some other interviews that you did, I think, off of it, which is great. That's really the purpose that you want to get the word out. But did you got some feedback from it, right? That you helped some people?
Yeah, so there was a lot of people that reached out to me after that podcast. And, I mean, I'm grateful that you took it as far as you did because, like, going into it, I didn't have any idea what we were going to talk about either because I don't think there's ever been a time in our lives, Jim Day, that me and you have been very serious around each other.
No.
So it was kind of one of those things that, you know, I mean, whatever brought you to ask me this, I'm grateful for it because like I've never been shy about my issues in the past, but I was also never one to just come out and say, hey, guess what? You know, so like if somebody asked, obviously I'd had no problem talking about it. And I'm glad you asked because yes, it did you know, garner some attention and some people reached out to me, and then even Bobby Nightingale Jr., we sat down with him for hours and he put something out in USA Today, and I got feedback from people seeing that. And I mean, it was kind of just an amazing thing. And I really didn't know how it would turn out, but I think I told you at the time, like if just one person asked me for help and I was able to direct them in the right place, then it was a success, you know? Yeah. And there was definitely more than one person that we helped. So I'm very appreciative for you for doing that.
Well, appreciative to you. I mean, I just gave you the vehicle. You're the one that did it. So, but I'm glad that got the ball rolling. And I forgot about that article that certainly reached a lot of people. So glad to do it, man. Very glad to do it. But we're going to walk down some memory lanes here because you're going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But let's start there. I think we had you on the Hot Stove show and talked about this, but now we're months removed from that. Are you getting ready for the speech? You said you didn't have any idea how long or what you were going to say, and you're going to need more time. Now we're inching closer here. We're in May. This is coming up in July. So have you done any more thinking about it? Yeah.
Actually, I've done a little bit of thinking. The only thinking that I've done about it is, you know, I'd like to mention a lot of names that of people that were around me and people that have, you know, were always supportive of my career. All you guys in the media, guys from the clubhouse, guys you know, just behind the scenes people that the everyday fan doesn't realize has an impact on our careers. So that to me is really the only thing that I've concentrated on, like, cause I don't want to leave anybody out and I'm afraid I'm going to. So I've got this notepad with just names written and I'm going to keep adding names and maybe even taking some away. I don't know, but I'm going to just keep writing names down because I don't want to leave anybody out.
Yeah.
And thanking them for, you know, being a part of my career, a part of my life.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. You're going in with Arroyo. Are you guys going to sing a duet, by the way? I know Bronson's going to do some singing.
Listen, if he asked me to do a duet with them, he'll never have a recording contract again because I will butcher it. Now, if he wanted me to lip sync something, I'll do that in a heartbeat. But I don't want to ruin his musical career. Well, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I do think there's going to be, just so you people know, I think there's going to be some performing involved. It's going to be a different Hall of Fame ceremony. And by the way, I think as of right now, unless they, you know, boot me to the curb and get someone else more important, which is really not hard to do, I think I'm going to be emceeing that weekend. So,
dude, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be so cool for you. Yeah.
I think that's
happening.
Well,
they better not boot you, because if they boot you, then I'm going to call Bronson and we're boycotting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure. Now, speaking of music, I'm going through, I don't even know where this came up the other day. I was looking up some stuff of the 99 team, which I want to talk to you about. And somehow I came across this Poison concert photo.
Yeah.
Speaking of music.
Yes.
Now, and we've got Aaron Boone in town right now. Red's playing the Yankees. He was in the picture. You and Casey and... Boy, I want to say
Adam Dunn.
Todd Walker.
Todd Walker.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you guys are all duded up going to this Poison concert, right? Right? Was it Poison?
Yes. It was Poison along with Cinderella and Winger. But our main thing was going to see Poison. Yeah.
And Winger. It was so every funny, time I think Jim of Winger, Day. I think of Beavis and Butthead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, how can you not think of Beavis and Butthead?
I know.
Yeah, so that was an off day. We were leaving Cincinnati on a Sunday. We just lost, which back then we lost a lot of games. So we get to Chicago on Sunday night. We had Monday off, so we had the day off in Chicago. Well, we drove, I don't even remember the name of the place. It wasn't far, but we went to the Poison Cinderella Winger concert, and we didn't have like the right gear or anything. So we bought shirts, concert shirts. Todd Walker bit the sleeves off my orange Poison shirt. And then,
what?
Like, seriously.
He bit the sleeves off.
He chewed them off for me. And, you know, it's funny because I see Todd at least once every year. And he's like, dude, I don't remember biting that off. And I said, dude, I don't remember a lot of that stuff that night, but I remember you biting off the sleeves. So, it was for sure he bit the sleeves off. But that is such a classic picture.
Oh,
like,
it's a great picture.
Out, yeah, when it gets out, people are like, oh, my gosh, that's the coolest thing ever.
It is a great picture. Yeah. I mean, it is just a moment in time where you're like, yeah. I guess you don't – you said you don't remember much of that night, and we won't get into that, Danny. But Casey was a major Poison fan. So do you remember what he was like? He had to be – I mean, he's excited to everything anyways, but was he crazy that night?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it was probably his idea that we went.
Sure,
like, he was the ringleader.
Yeah.
And the only reason I'm front and center is because I was the shortest one. So I had to get out of everybody's way. I was the short guy. So that's, because it looks like I'm the leader of the pack, but I'm not. I'm telling you, it was Casey. Like he was in charge of all that rock stuff. But we all followed right along. And, you know, I do remember we were trying to find a way to get backstage to see Bret Michaels. But, like, it didn't work. I don't know who buckled or who dropped the ball or who got scared to do it. Let's just say it was Casey who was scared to get us back there.
Well, you know, I wish I would have, you know, one of those times where you wish you had, like, a camera that was shooting video of something. When Every Rose Has Its Thorn came on one day and Carrie just – or Casey belted it out like karaoke. It was beautiful. Yeah. I wish everyone could have seen him. He gets into that song so much. So much.
And that's not the only one, dude. He'll start busting out with some other 80s rock songs, and it's unbelievable, dude.
Yeah.
But those are good times. Could you imagine if we had phones back then and video of
like
the things that we did, the concerts we went to? Oh my god.
Well, that and there would be some inappropriate harnish moments in the clubhouse.
Very inappropriate.
Now, I don't mean like inappropriate offending people, but I mean just like nudity.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, Pete Harnish naked is offending. So, yeah.
So, how often do you these teammates? I've asked similar questions to other people, but do you have like text threads of certain guys that you keep in touch with that once in a while, you know, there'd be like five former teammates in a text thread? Do you guys stay in touch at all?
No, we don't have an actual thread. Cause a lot of guys that like aren't really in the media side anymore and kind of out of the game, they just blow us off. Like Jason LaRue is the worst. I live like 30 minutes from him in Texas. And he won't even text me back. He's the worst.
Come on. So,
yeah, dude. It's unbelievable how, like, he just blows us off. But, you know, he's got this big old ranch down in Texas, and he's all big time. We always made fun of him about being big time and big cowboy and all that. So, you know what? He may not even have a cell phone anymore.
I was going to say.
He's so, like, off the grid.
I could, you know, when he was a player, you could totally see that was going to happen. Like, when he retires, we may never hear from Jason LaRue ever again when he's done with baseball, which has been the case for me. I haven't talked to him, heard of him. This is the first anyone's brought him up in a long time. So off the grid.
Yeah. And I'm not the only one that he blows off. I've heard a lot of other people talk about that too. But I do keep in touch. Like Sean Casey's the best at it. Like,
yeah.
I'll just get random texts from him.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'll be like, hey, dude, just thinking of you. Love you, brother. And then the next one will be like a pig and slop, a little gif of a pig, because, you know, he likes calling everybody pigs. And then it's just that, like, nothing else, just a pig. I'm like, dude. But he's always, like, dropping texts here and there. So he's great. He's great.
He's beautiful. Now, Aaron Boone in town this weekend, or should I say Booney? Booney? Or as Jerry and Aaron was a Booney. We got Booney down. We got Booney down there third.
Have you talked to him yet?
I did. You know, last year, the Reds were at Yankee Stadium. And you know how the New York media is. So, I was like, hey, Aaron, can we do a one-on-one interview, which doesn't really happen much in New York, I guess? And he did it, you know, because we go back. So, the New York media was like, hey, what's going on? Who's this guy? Who's this guy? He getting a one-on-one, the Cincinnati guy? You know.
My gosh.
Yeah, they were losing their mind.
So New York media is anti-Jim Day.
Oh, they're like, who? You know, they didn't know who I am. Who's this guy?
That's hysterical.
Yes. So he was, as we record this, it's Saturday. So yesterday he met with the media and fought back the emotions, actually, of being back in Cincinnati. He was here in like 2015, I think, when he was broadcasting for ESPN, but not the same as coming back and going in the visiting, you know, and this time going in the visiting clubhouse. He said he was really emotional leaving the hotel. And so, what the heck are you doing?
Oh, sorry. That was my iron board. I'm getting ready to iron something.
By the way, the ironing boards in hotels are the worst. Terrible.
They are. Sometimes the iron's bad too. I ruined one of my shirts last week.
So did I. Ruined them. You got to test them out first because it'll just eat clothes. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Or it'll burn. It'll burn a brown spot and look like somebody dropped a turd on your shirt. it's awful.
That was a quick tangent. Yeah. Glad I got on that soapbox. Anyways, Boone.
I have a lot of those. Yeah. I have a lot of those quick things too.
So yeah. You know, life on the road, it's rough. You know, it's rough talking for a living, Danny, isn't it? You're finding that out right now. It's really rough talking for a living.
Yeah, I know. It is. I actually, you know, it's funny because I I was just in at Fenway Park. We did something for ACC Network. Boston College and Notre Dame had this huge ALS game, so we went and kind of covered that. So when I left Boston this morning, I stopped at a little like rest area where they had some coffee and restaurants. And I go in and there's a dude wearing a Notre Dame shirt. And I'm like, hey, did you go to the game? So yeah, he was one of the coaches for one of these kids on Notre Dame. And we just got to talking. And I'm like, dude, can you believe I get paid to talk? And I'm like, yeah. Wow, that's a pretty nice gig.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
I love it.
Yeah. No, people will be like, man, that's really tough last year. Lost 100 games. It has to just be awful for you. I'm like, man, I talk for a living. I cover baseball and I talk for a living. And I travel right. in a first class way. So don't feel bad for me. Don't feel badly for me. I'll be all right. So
exactly. Yeah.
It's all good. Even though we do complain along the way. But anyways,
we're supposed to.
What the heck was I talking about? I love these tangents we get on.
Oh, you're talking about Aaron Boone.
Yeah, he was emotional that he came back. So, yeah, I have seen him and talked to him. But my question is this, and I think I saw this. You were on Casey's podcast a few years back, weren't you? The mayor?
Yes, I was.
The mayor's office, by the way. Shout out, mayor's office podcast. Check it out.
That's right.
You were telling a story about airmailing a throw to was Booney at third base? Was this? What was the story?
Yeah. Okay, so 1997, I got traded from Cleveland to Cincinnati.
And, right.
I was on the – they called it the disabled list back then. So I was on the disabled list for a while because my shoulder was kind of jacked up. So then right before the trade deadline, Cleveland activated me, and I was in AAA. They activated me. So I pitched one game, and I got traded the next day. So I get traded to Cincinnati, go to Indianapolis where AAA was, and my arm was still killing me. Like, I think they, you know, activated me just because they wanted this trade to go through. So my arm was still hurting. And so we're in Nashville, and it was the situation, second and third. The guy from third tags up on a fly ball. Well, he leaves early. Clearly, he left early. So I don't know if you've been to Nashville's AAA park, Jim Day. But
I have not.
Between back then, I don't know if it's the same park. Back then, the third baseline and the dugout and the stands were maybe 15 to 20 feet away. Like, there wasn't much foul territory. So he clearly doesn't tag up. And so Booney's like, hey, let's do an appeal. Let's get him here. So play goes on, and I step off, and I walk towards Booney, and I tell the umpire, just appealing this play. The guy left early. And I try to throw it to Booney, and it goes 10 feet over his head into the stands. Like, I airmailed him so bad, it's in the stands. And he didn't even move, Jim Day. He just, like, watched it. Like, it's one of those that, you know, somebody hits a 500-foot homer and the outfielders don't move. That's what Booney did to me. And, like, he just was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he just did that. And I'm like, I can't believe it either. So guess what? Now the runner that was on second, he gets to score because of it. So – it was awful. It was awful. That was like my first appearance with the new Reds organization, watching me airmail a ball into the stands.
And didn't you?
Good trade.
Yeah, they're like, what did we trade for here?
Right.
And there was another story you told on that podcast about you were thrown with Trevor Hoffman.
Was oh, yeah.
accidentally nailed a fan?
So, yes, this was a 2000 All-Star game in Atlanta. And, I was named to the All-Star team late because Greg Maddux, like, I wasn't initially on the team. And Greg Maddux backed out because, whatever, he'd go on a vacation or something. So, they picked me to be an alternate or sub, whatever they call it. So, I make the All-Star team that year. A bunch of the relievers are like, hey, let's go out there and throw. And so I just kind of followed everybody. I'm trying to be like incognito. And Trevor Hoffman's like, hey, Danny, you want to play catch? I'm like, seriously? Like, I thought it was the coolest thing that he wanted to play catch with me. So I'm like, yeah, let's play catch. I said, how far you want to go back? You know, you want a long toss or just keep it short? He says, oh, go back as far as you want. So, dude, I'm 20, 6 years old at the time, and I'm feeling so froggy today. Like, my arm felt so good, and I'm like, I could throw this 100 miles an hour. I can throw it 500 feet. So I get back, and I start airmailing it. Same thing. He watches the ball go over his head. There's a guy leaning over the rail screaming at somebody, give me a ball, give me a ball, and it smokes him right in the forehead. And Hoffman looks at me like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just saw you hit this guy.
Was he all right, I hope? And,
yes, yeah. He's like, I'm good. So he got a ball. He got a free ball out of it.
Oh, there you
go. I mean, which is all he wanted.
A concussion and a free ball. What a trip to the park.
Yeah, so, and listen, his claim to fame is Trevor Hoffman gave me a baseball, not Danny Graves hit me in the head with a baseball.
That's true.
So, I mean, Trevor Hoffman's a Hall of Famer, man.
Well,
I'll tell everybody that story.
Well, yeah, he's thrown with Trevor Hoffman. He was nicknamed by Deion Sanders. How about that? And, well, I think you have a little bit of a relationship with The Rock, and I want to ask you about that after this. All right, we're back with Danny Graves. Now, what's this deal with The Rock? You know The Rock, right? You went to school with The Rock, right? You went to the U?
I did. The U, yeah, I did. We had some dumber school classes together because we didn't really try as hard as we should have our first couple of years. So.
Hold on, what? You had what? Dumber school classes?
Dumber school.
Let me guess, communications.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Like, seriously.
Hey, listen, this is a true story. People say, why did you study communications in college? Was it you always wanted to be a broadcaster? I'm like, no, I was trying to avoid the hard math classes. I didn't want to.
That's so funny that you say that. Like, I'm not even joking.
I couldn't do the algebra and calculus and all that. I'm like, no chance.
Well, can I tell you why we were in communications?
Yeah.
Because the athletic department said, this is the class that you can go to and you don't have to worry about it. Just go to this class and participate and you'll get an A for the summer. So that's why we did it. But it turns out it worked out great for a couple of us anyways.
Well, you know? Yeah, I'd say he's an international superstar. Worked out good for him.
Yeah, and you know what? He did not want to be a wrestler.
Really?
Like, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, his dad was a famous wrestler, Rocky Johnson.
Rocky Johnson and tag team champions with Tony Atlas.
Yeah. They
were big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he didn't want to be a wrestler. He wanted to play football.
Right.
Unfortunately, the year that I came in, he was a year older than me, but the year that I came in, so did Warren Sapp. Well, Warren Sapp was the tight end when he came into Miami, when they ended up moving him to nose tackle, which just happened to be where Dwayne was playing. And the rest is history. Warren Sapp was one of the best nose tackles ever to play the game. So, kind of lost out. Dwayne lost out to Sapp. So anyways, all that stuff happens. And then we go to dumber school and we're in this communications class and we actually have to give.
I went there too. It's all good.
Yeah, summer school sounds fun. Dumber school, not so much. So we have to do speeches in front of each other, and it's a bunch of football players and baseball players, and then a couple like real students, like normal students, but mainly just athletes. So we're in there, we do the speeches, and so this whole time, like, I'm telling Dwayne, I said, dude, you have to go into wrestling. You've got to. There's no other question about it. I said, when you do, I'll be your manager. He's like, oh, whatever, dude. I'm not going in. I don't want to be a wrestler. I'm going to go play football. And like, he was so humble back then too. And I'm like, dude, if you go into wrestling, just remember I'm your manager. So we end up going our separate ways. He doesn't make it in football. He starts at the lower ranks, going to the little arenas. And we used to go see him at these little arenas with his mother and his now ex-wife, who is actually his partner, his business partner, Danny Garcia. She went to Miami too. So we all used to go watch him wrestle these little events. And next thing you know, like, my career starts going a different direction. And then he starts going like sky high with everything. And so I lost touch with him until a couple years ago, maybe, I was doing this other podcast for somebody, and we talked about The Rock. And then he tweeted back to us saying, you know, Danny, and he's talking about me and Warren Sapp being great dudes. And Sapp wanted me to play football. Danny wanted me to wrestle and all this stuff. I don't even remember the exact tweet, but he said something about that. So that was the last contact I had with him because wow. He's a little more busy than I am.
He's slightly busy. But the fact that he's still tweeting you, I mean, he's got like a gajillion followers. So,
yeah,
that's awesome.
I know he's. Yeah, it's pretty cool. But he was such a good dude back then. And I mean, he still is, obviously. And you know what? A story that I didn't remember.
Did you see that?
Oh, my Siri's talking to me. There's a story when we were playing that Sean Casey reminded me of. He's like, I think we talked about this on his podcast. He's like, dude, you remember that time at Shea Stadium when I went into the dugout during batting practice and then there's this big Samoan guy standing in the dugout saying, hey, where's Danny Graves? And I'm like, no, who could that have been? He's like, it was The Rock, stupid. He was looking for you. And I'm like, seriously? So
didn't you commandeer his time? You dominated his time or something and ticked off the rest of the team?
Yes. Yeah, I did. Hey, man, I feel bad about it now. But at the time, I'm like, dude, this is my friend, not y'all. You know?
That is awesome. He came into the dugout and said, where's Danny Graves? And this is when he was The Rock. I mean, he was The Rock then, right?
Yeah. This was before he went back to Dwayne. Yeah. Like he was strictly just The Rock.
Yeah.
And which was so cool, man. I felt good about that. Like, you know, he didn't forget where he came from. He's still just a great dude to the people that knew him before. So I felt pretty good. And like I said, I was selfish. I'm not sharing my friend with anybody. And that was it.
That is beautiful. Another,
yeah.
What was I going to ask you about? I love that you're friends with The Rock, by the way. And the fact that you and Casey are wrestling fans, and the time you did an independent show, I think, together. Didn't you guys go to the ring and have a match?
Well, so he actually had a match. I think it was with one of the referees, but I was D'Lo Brown's manager. I don't know if you know who D'Lo Brown is.
I remember D'Lo Brown, yeah.
Yeah, so we're friends on Twitter, too, now, and because of that. But, you know, he would shake his head coming down the aisle, going to the ring, like, shake it real fast. So I was his manager that night. So I started shaking my head, climbing in the ring like I was big man. It was so awesome.
The video of you guys going to the ring, because you are shaking like D'Lo Brown did. But Casey got to punch a ref.
Yeah, he got to punch a referee.
Oh, let me guess. It was supposed to be a fake punch. He probably landed it, knowing Casey.
You know, I mean, either the referee played it so well, or he really did punch him. So I don't know the true story about that.
Because
Casey's never admitted it.
When Casey high-fives you, when he greets you, I mean, you better be ready, because he'll be like, what's up, brother? Boom! And I'm like, ah! Like nearly separating your shoulder. High five, she's so
dude. Hard. Yes, it's crazy. Like he doesn't know how stupid strong he is.
He is.
Yeah.
He'll high five. I'm serious. There's one day we're like, ow, ow, that man just hurt me high fiving.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, he I'm surprised he didn't put anybody on the IL because of his slaps. So you've seen video of us coming down the aisle?
There is video somewhere. I've seen it of you guys coming to the ring. And
you mentioned
D'Lo Brown because he shook his neck a lot. And you're doing that same thing, coming to the ring. The video exists of you going to the ring. We're going to have to look that up somehow, some way.
Yeah, or when this goes out to the public, somebody needs to like send us. To us.
Yes, there is video of you guys coming to the ring because I have seen it. Unless that was many brain cells ago, which is also possible. But no, there's video out there.
Well, you described exactly what happened, so it's not like your brain cells are making things up. It happened.
They have before. You were telling a story, another Aaron Boone thing where he was Mr. Buzzkill after your first home run.
Oh my gosh, the worst. It's so Boone-y too. It's so Aaron Boone.
It's in Houston,
Boone is
right?
Like one of my Yes. And listen, he's one of my greatest friends I've ever had playing the game of baseball. But it was so Aaron Boone and so expected. Like, that's why he's a manager of the Reds or the Yankees right now.
This says it all of why he's a manager now, this story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should have seen it coming, dude. So I'll build it up here a little bit. So I was coming out of the game. I don't know if you remember the exact situation. It was a tie game, and I just pitched two innings. We were in extra innings.
Extra innings, yeah.
Yeah, so my spot was coming up in the order in our next at-bat, and Hal Morris had his helmet and his bat and gloves and on-deck circle everything, just waiting to go up there and hit. And so Pokey Reese hits a three-run homer, so we're up like 6-3 now. And Jack McKeon's like, Hal, come back, come back. He's like, Danny, you're hitting. And I'm like, what? I'm hitting. I don't have anything ready. So they're like, come on, you're hitting, you're hitting. So I went and grabbed a helmet, no batting gloves. I grabbed Gookie Dawkins' bat. And thankfully, it was Gookie Dawkins because he couldn't hit anyway. So there was a bunch of hits left in that bat. So I grabbed his bat, and I went up there. So I hit the home run off Mike Maddox. And it was just insane. Like, it barely made it out, but it still counted.
Crawford
as a homer.
Boxes.
Crawford boxes. That's right. It was a screaming line drive.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget running around the bases. Ken Caminiti was at third base for the Astros at that year. And he's got his glove over his face. And I could see like his shoulders bouncing. He's laughing hysterically that I just went deep. And so I come around and I score and I come in the dugout and everybody's like going nuts. There's even video of Dimitri on top of the rail, like he's in a wrestling ring, just going nuts for me. And then I get down and shake everybody's hand. I get down and Booney's like, dude, chill out. You still got to go pitch the next inning. I'm like, are you serious? I said, are you serious right now, dude? Like, I can't even enjoy my first ever hit and it's a homer. He's like, you have to pitch. You got to finish the game. And I'm like, ah, what a Debbie Downer, man.
Oh, that is so Booney. That is so manager-esque, though. That is like your man. You know.
Totally. Totally. So Boone. Like, I mean, you should have known he was going to be a manager someday because of that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But I love Booney, though. He's so great. Oh, and I always fantastic. Make fun of him about that. But
love it.
Still to this day, like, if you said something to Booney today about, hey, remember when Danny hit his first home run in Houston and you told him to not celebrate and that he still got to go pitch another inning, I guarantee you Booney would say, well, yeah, he had to go out and pitch and finish the game. Like, and he would say it dead serious.
Like, yeah, I'm still
without
right.
Smiling.
I'm still right about it. Doggone it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So how did you, do you finish off that game? I can't remember. You did, right?
I did. I finished out the game and I got 3-3 down. And the last out was Craig Biggio, who, like, I didn't do very well off Craig Biggio. I hated facing him because he was such a tough out.
Yeah.
Well, so we're up 7-3, and the first pitch I throw him, he squares around and bunts and pops it up to me down the first baseline. And I went and caught it, and we're, like, looking face-to-face. I'm like, dude, thank you for bunting that.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. It was like he just – right. It was like he wanted to get the game over with and go home. I'm like, this is great. This is beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, we will continue to walk down memory lane, including the 99 team, and we'll do it right after this. All right, Danny. This the 1999 team. You know, the 1990 obviously gets a lot of praise, and rightfully so. They won the World Series, and obviously the Big Red Machine is huge. But that 99 team that won 96 games, which was one of the best teams to ever, I guess, not advance to the playoffs because you lost that one game playoff. And I don't want to talk about the weekend in Milwaukee. That was just tough.
Yeah.
But what I do want to talk about is that team kind of captured the imagination of the town. And winning 96 games, I don't care what the situation is. You win 96, you're really, really good. But I just wanted to go over some of the names on that. By the way, was that your favorite year playing?
Hands down. And there was nothing better. And remember, like, before I came to Cincinnati, I was with Cleveland in 96 and 97, and those teams were
great,
stacked. 97
great teams.
They lost in the World Series to the Marlins. They had great players. 96, Eddie Murray was on that team. Like a lot of phenomenal players, but nothing compared to 99 Reds for me.
All right, you got Casey at first. Goes without saying, Sean Casey. Yep. We could talk yeah. all day with Casey. Pokey Reese, second base.
Yep.
Flat out pick it. I mean, you got Pokey Reese at second base and Barry Larkin at shortstop. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know what's crazy about that? Brett Boone was with us for a couple years and won some gold gloves at second base. And we all knew how great he was. I mean, his glove, he's got the quickest hands I've ever seen turning double play. But then when he leaves and they give Pokey the job, finally, we're like, we're not losing anything. I mean, I loved Brett Boone. He was a great teammate too, but a lot of times you lose a player of that caliber, you're in trouble, especially up the middle.
Yeah.
But Pokey was, oh my gosh, I'll never forget. There was a game that we were down like 13-1 and I came in to pitch just to get some work in. And there was a couple guys on and somebody hits it up the middle and he's still diving to keep the ball on the infield because he didn't want that run to score. And not many players do that. And then it goes on the pitcher's stats. And it's not all about stats. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, like, he was saving a run for me, even though we were down 12. He didn't have to dive for that ball. And that was when it was on turf, you know? Yeah. So the kind of player that he was, man, it was just, like, he did anything for his pitchers. And he didn't care if he hit. We didn't care if he hit. But he was going to get every ball he could get and make some plays.
Yeah.
And I know he won a gold glove. I don't know if it was that year or maybe a couple years in a row, but man, him and Larkin, and you know, before Larkin started slowing down, wow.
Yeah.
What an up the middle.
Oh my God. I mean, Pokey Reese, if you put him at shortstop, he's an outstanding shortstop. He was a converted shortstop.
Yeah.
So that was just crazy good. And Boone could pick it down third as well. So, and that's really good infield. Now you go to the outfield. Now, this guy, we want to talk about leader, Greg Vaughn. 45 yeah. bombs, 118 RBIs that year. And leading the team, right? I mean, Larkin was, if you're going to choose, I mean, it was Larkin's team, Larkin City. But Vaughn brought in a whole different wave of leadership, did he not?
It was, like, it's hard to explain what Greg Vaughn brought to this organization that year. Well, one, he got the mustache ban.
Single-handedly.
That was never a thing anymore. And that's all because of Greg Vaughn, in case people don't know.
That had stood that over 100 doing. Years. That rule was over 100 years in the making.
Yeah, yeah. But when we traded for him, we knew the year before he hit 50 bombs. And we're like, we got somebody now that's going to hit over 30. Because we didn't really have that before. We didn't have any boppers. So we're thinking, oh, we got 30 homers right here for sure. Well, he ends up hitting 45 and 118 RBIs. And that's not what we loved about him, though. There was one time early in the season, because we started that year 0-3. We lost three straight games to the Giants. I think two of them we should have won, and we gave it up. I did, at least one of them. but we started to struggle at the beginning of the season. It might have been 2 weeks into the season, and nobody panics 2 weeks into the season, right? I don't care like what team you are. It's 2 weeks into the season. It's maybe 10 games that you've played, or not even. So he calls a team meeting, a players-only meeting, and we're like, really? He wants to have a players-only meeting already? And I can't tell you what he said. I don't remember what he said, but I can tell you whatever he said, it worked. And then – we all just immediately loved each other like brothers. And it wasn't one of those things where, you know, come down the days to pick your own friends, as Pete Harnish would always say, you know, because you're forced to be friends with everybody on your team because you're with them so much. But this team, we weren't forced. Like, we wanted to be with each other. We wanted to do things together. We even had our team party, which a lot of team parties, since this is a family show, I can't tell you what happens on a lot of those team parties, but our team party that year, we were in St. Louis and we had a paintball day. like just peppering each other with paintballs out in the woods. That was our team party. And that's what we wanted to do, though, because we love being around each other. So
that's great.
And I think, all of that is because what Greg Vaughn brought to that team. I mean, he believed in everybody else more than he believed himself.
Wow.
In himself. You know, he was amazing.
Well, I had him on this podcast, and it was via Zoom. So we weren't face to face, but mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want to say intimidated, but I'm like, should I ask Greg Vaughn about this? Because he might climb through this computer screen. Light me up. But he couldn't have been nicer. He couldn't have been better. Go back in the archives if you'd like to listen to that, folks. As well as the Danny Graves podcast that we talked about before, that it was talked about the mental side and depression and all that, which is really uplifting in the end. So go back in the archives and listen to that as well. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I want to listen to that Greg Vaughn one too, because he's very scary looking and very intimidating, and especially playing against him. You know, I don't know if I faced him when he was with the Padres, but you see that guy up there and just the look on his face is like, I might come out there and choke you out right now. You know, and it's like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
this guy's so scary.
Teammates have said that he led partially by fear, that they just didn't want to deal with Greg, do something wrong, that you have to deal with Greg Vaughn on the top step of the dugout or in
right.
the clubhouse.
But the thing about Greg Vaughn, though, is he had that fear look, but he was the gentlest dude ever and like such a great teammate. If there was a problem, if he had a problem with you, he would pull you aside and talk to you about it. Like, he wasn't going to like chew you out or scream at you,
yeah.
but like kind of guide you how to do it better
yeah.
or do it right.
Yeah. I was surprised at how soft spoken he was. Yeah. Surprised how soft spoken. Yeah. But at the same time,
he's so humble too.
Yeah. Man. Same time, intimidating and just leader written all over him. So, let's see Mike Cameron in center field. I heard great things about him being a teammate.
Mike Cameron, I was teammates with him, obviously 99 and then again in 05 with the Mets.
Yeah.
They're to me, and I played with some great center fielders, Kenny Lofton in Cleveland, and of course Junior when he came. Carlos Beltran was in center with the Mets. And that was when Mike moved over to right. But when he came in 99, at that time, I didn't think there was any better center fielder in the game. I truly believed he was the best center fielder before we even started that season, because I faced him a lot in the minor leagues. We played against each other coming up, and to have him on our team, I'm like, this is unbelievable to have somebody with his ability. And then he ends up hitting a ton of home runs and a bunch of stolen bases. He was an amazing leadoff guy for us.
Yeah. You guys hit a lot of bombs. That team hit a lot of bombs. You had a lot of players that hit home runs. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers right here.
Like, dude, we hit 9 in one game.
Yeah, but Tobensy was behind the plate, hit 21, 87 RBIs.
Listen, I'm gonna take credit for that, and I'll tell you why. Me and Gabe White, you remember Gabe, lefty in the bullpen year. So Eddie was, we all know how big and strong Eddie is. Like, he's such a nice dude, so calm, and so he would have this little swing like he was just trying to fillet it to left field, like, I'm just gonna punch it out there. And we're like, one day we said to Eddie, I'm like, I don't know who said it first, but it was like, Eddie, why are you just punching it out there? Look at your muscles, dude.
Hey, he's huge.
Swing hard. Yeah. So from then on, I was like, Eddie, swing hard, please, just swing hard, who cares what happens, swing hard. Well, he ends up hitting 21 homers, or is that how many, 20-something?
He had 21 home runs and 87 RBIs.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. From a catcher.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, if you go and if you talk to Eddie today or whenever you had a chance to talk to him and said, hey, that year you hit 21, what happened? Why did you just hit so many home runs? He'll tell you, because me and Gabe told him to swing hard.
Get out of town.
He always,
really?
He always brings that up. Yeah.
That's
he always
great.
Brings that up to me anytime I see him. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
So,
breaking news.
Yeah.
Danny Graves
breaking
was
news.
Responsible for 21 bombs from Ed Tobensy, who had
new
himself
hitting
a
coach
year.
For the 1999 Reds.
Well, Casey had 25 bombs that year. 99 ribeye steaks. People hate that term, by the way. Even Pokey Reese had 10 home runs. See, Boone had 14. 45 from Vaughn. 21 from Cameron.
Dimitri. What Dimitri did
had
have?
14 home runs and 127 games. Jeffrey Hammonds had 17 home runs. Yeah. So you got to have
and
a lot of guys.
And he was our fourth outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, obviously one guy hitting 45, that's the story. But a bunch of guys that hit 20 or 15, I mean, one, two, three, four guys hit over 20 home runs. That's a lot on a team.
Wow, yeah. How many did Michael Tucker have?
Michael Tucker had 11.
Wow.
Yeah, you had a lot of guys with double-digit home runs. I mean, wow, you guys get hit, man. Wow.
Yeah. Well, we also had a really good bullpen that year, Jim Dave, if you recall.
Well, none better. I mean, obviously you, and you mentioned Gabe White, but Scott Sullivan, the ultimate rubber arm guy. When you speak of rubber arm guys, and I bring up Scott Sullivan, he's not like a huge name throughout Major League Baseball, and they're like, who's Scott Sullivan? I'm like, look him up. Pitched all the time. Multiple innings.
Look at his numbers,
all the time. He was unbelievable, like nearly every day, it seemed like. I know that's not the case, but he pitched a lot.
Well, yeah, and there wasn't many times that when he came in that it was only a one-inning thing. Like, it was multiple innings majority of the time. I mean, he was a godsend to us. And, you know, and we only had six relievers that year.
And he was that – I mean, was that Williams' rookie year?
Yeah.
He won Rookie of the Year
that year.
Yeah.
And so if he kind of slowed down a little bit at the end with fatigue or some arm pain a little bit, he still tried to pitch through it. But if he would have been completely healthy, we would have three guys in that bullpen to throw over 100 innings. Because he had 93. I had 108, and I think Sully had 111.
Wow.
So.
Well, you had 111. Sullivan had 113.
Okay, so there was 111. How you doing?
Yeah, you had 111. Yeah, come on with it now. Come on.
Yeah, I'll take those three extra.
Williamson pitched 93 and a third. Big Sweat, Dennis
Big
Reyes.
Sweat.
Another great nickname. 61 and two thirds innings. Gabe White 61 innings. So, man, you guys were workhorses.
Yeah. And Stan Belinda.
Yeah.
How many he had quite
Stan
a bit.
Stan Belinda had 42 innings. Juan Guzman pitched 77 and a third. Goodness.
We traded him at the deadline.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah.
Wow. How about that?
Yeah, what a team.
These names
are
my goodness. And then we didn't even talk about the starters. I mean, what you had Harnish, Tomko, Ron Valone had a good year that year.
Ron Valone had an amazing year. Steve Parris had a good year.
Steve Parris, Denny Nagel, Steve Avery.
Nagel, too,
was on that team.
Yeah, Avery pitched some good games for us.
Yeah, that's what a team.
That's the thing, man. We had
a great team.
We had just a lot of people contributing.
You know, I loved
that
about
success. It wasn't just a couple guys.
Loved about that team? The bounce.
What?
The walk-off bounce. There's never been a better bounce as a team in the history of baseball.
Well, you know why? I'll tell you why. Because that team invented the bounce, Jim Day. Ask Booney that. Ask him if you see him today. The 99 team invented the bounce on a walk-off homer. And everybody tried to replicate it. And it just – I'm not lying. Nobody ever did the bounce until we did. I don't know why we did it,
but we did it. Perfect unison. It's like he practiced it. And I don't see the bounce enough anymore. You got these crazy celebrations. They have to bring out the Gatorade and the water, blah, blah, blah. Just give me the bounce. I want the bounce.
Yeah, the bounce, right. And, of course, that was when the pitchers – we had to sit in the dugout, too. We didn't have a bullpen.
Right.
So it was easy to have a bunch of guys out there in the bounce. But you're right. Like, we were all in unison.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, it was – So anybody you talk to from the 99 team – just bring up the bounce, and the first thing they'll say is, we invented it.
Yes.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
I love it.
Pretty amazing.
There are people right now like, what is he talking about? What's the bounce? Those women, they have a walk-off, and at home plate, it would be a walk-off home run, really, because the other ones, you guys are going out celebrating the guy that you're
going towards the hitter.
But the home run, man, around home plate, where you just get in a – you bunch together in a circle, basically, and just jump up and down in unison. It was beautiful. I loved it.
It was almost like you needed, like, an orchestra playing music while we were bouncing, because we weren't just standing in one spot. We were all bouncing at the same time and kind of moving at the same time, you know?
Yes.
It was beauty.
Wow, we should go back in the archives and get all the bounces and then put them to some classical music or some type of beat.
Oh, my gosh, please do. You got pool with that.
How large would that be? Get you guys in a room. Listen, a 99 team reunion, and all of a sudden, all right, I got a video for you, boys.
Okay, we need to get a hold of Dreamweaver or Rufus or somebody.
Name drop. Yeah, although they're going to be name happy. Drops. They made the Rufus. God love him. He just made the podcast.
Yeah.
or as Marty Brenneman calls him, the ruggedly handsome Ron Millenor.
Oh my gosh, that's his real name? I didn't know that was his real name.
Oh yeah, his real name is Ron Millenor. Yeah.
Well, he's always Rufus.
But we call him Rufus, yes. That's what I didn't know his name back in the day. They're like, you know where Ron Millenor is? Like, I don't know who Ron Millenor is. What? He just told me he was with you. Like, who's Ron? Rufus. Oh, Rufus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rufus. We are just under an hour right now, so I don't want to keep you. I know you got some broadcasting to do. Because, again, talking for a living is very tough. It's a tough gig.
The toughest part of me having to work tonight is that I have to iron my clothes and make sure that the iron doesn't burn my clothes.
Yes.
That's the
good luck
part.
With that, because it is. I've been there, man. It's rough with those irons on the road. It's sometimes not good. Not good at all.
Yeah, not good. And I'll let you know, too, by the way, that I did take off my City Connect shirt because I started sweating because I got so, like, excited.
I love this. Well, I can't wait for you to be in town for the Hall of Fame weekend. Again, that is coming up in mid-July, July 15th and 16th. There'll be before the game on July 15th, you'll have to make a shorter speech on the field before the game. And then July 16th is the Hall of Fame Gala, which is always a really great event. So I'm looking forward to that. Maybe, you know, we ought to get, since you did Casey's podcast, we ought to get you and Casey together to do a podcast then.
You two with you?
You two together. Yeah, no, us three. I would try to stay out of the way.
Yeah, on your.
No,
dude, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
On this podcast, yes.
For sure.
They're going to have you locked up, though, busy. I'm sure he's coming in for it. I'm assuming he's coming in for it. I don't know that for a fact.
Well, yeah, he has to. He's a Hall of Fame, too.
I know. Guys sitting out there in that. You've seen all those guys sitting out there in those red jackets, and you're going to be one. Come on, that's got to be cool.
It's really cool, man. It is. I can't wait to get a red jacket. It's going to be so amazing.
I can't wait for you to get it.
I don't even know.
Cannot wait.
I appreciate all you do for me, Jim Day.
Oh, no, I appreciate you. The appreciation's going the other way.
But there is one more thing I'd ask that you do.
What's that?
I hope you are going to see Aaron Boone today. If not, maybe tomorrow. But do me a favor. The over-under on him picking his nose is 10.5. Because nobody picks their nose more than Aaron Boone. Okay, and he does it with his thumb. So please count when you see him.
He is the manager of the New York Yankees.
He's still Aaron Boone.
The amount of times he picks his nose with his thumb?
Yeah, that's me getting back at him for ruining my moment of a home run. That's what that is.
I hope no one in the New York media hears this. Because they'll ask him.
Well, I don't care. I don't care.
I just don't want the, hey, well, we're listening to a Cincinnati podcast, and they were talking about you picking your nose.
Somebody will catch wind of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it'll be some meme, or they'll count the amount. Oh, please don't. Oh.
Yeah. And then you know what's going to happen? Somebody in the media is going to say, well, apparently this is because you didn't let Danny have his moment on his first big league hit that was a homer. So it's a full circle here, man. There's a reason for everything.
I love it. Love it. All right, so much more to talk about. We'll do that down the road, and again, I'll see you in July. Happy for you, my friend. Thank you for the extra time today and, you know, your multitasking there.
Hey, man, I just appreciate you asking me and being flexible with the timing.
I was very flexible. You got to do what you got to do.
Because you saved me.
Got to do what you got to do in this business. But, the music, that means we got to wrap it up. There it is.
Yes,
Danny,
sir.
My friend, Godspeed, safe travels, and we'll see you in July.
Thank you.
That is Danny Graves, soon-to-be Reds Hall of Famer, here in the Jim Day Podcast, and we'll see you next time.